Once again, Dr. Rick Perea of Think One, about which we will talk more in the next few minutes. But right away, Rick, got excited when you walked into the studio, but again, I don't know how much you can do for the hamstring.
Right.
Maybe you can hypnotize, or otherwise convince him that the pain is only in the mind.
It is. Right. Everything starts in the brain, so just remember that, brother.
Yeah, I got some help for one of our texters that was a physical therapist. Jason texted me in and told me what to do and what not to do as far as no stretching, light foam rolling, a little bit of ibuprofen, and icing every hour for 20 minutes. So going to take that into consideration definitely after the show's done today.
We were talking during the break, as you were sitting down, about the NFL Combine.
Yes, sir.
And did I hear you correctly project that perhaps within the next decade, the NFL Combine will no longer exist as we know it today?
I did. I said that because I project that we can do so many things virtually, Sandy. Like, you look at my work, the work from the neck up, the personality assessments. We can do virtually all of that virtually, and we do. The only benefit we get is when we go into the interviews. And what I want people to understand is, you know, all that physiological testing they see, the 40 times, the jingle jangle, all those different drills, from 6 to 11 p.m. every night is from the neck up. And what happens is each team gets to bring in four guys per hour, 15-minute slots, and put them in front of you and ask them questions. But the powerful part of that is you get to see their nonverbals. Because as I was mentioning to you guys, every team brings in their top 30 before the draft. Between now and the draft, they bring in their top 30. And that prospect will spend the whole day at the facility. They'll spend an hour with the physical training group. They'll spend an hour with me. They'll spend an hour with the GM. That's the real face-to-face intimate work. At the combine, it's just this 15-minute in and out, 15-minute in and out, and you got another player in. So there's really not the emotional and psychological intimacy that you would like, Sandy, you know, in like you get with the top 30. So I would say in 10 years, I think it's going to be very different. I know the NFL wants to market it as obviously an earning tool, and it's doing that, and I get it. But, you know, seeing a kid run a 4.43 when you know he can run a 4.43 doesn't give you a lot of value. So I think in the next 10 years, it's going to change dramatically in the way it's presented.
Well, Doc, why is it important to see the nonverbal cues of these young players at the combine? And I know you attend this thing all the time, and it's so important to the NFL. But from your profession, right, the psychological part,
right,
why is it important to notice and see what are you told by seeing these nonverbal cues from these young athletes?
Right. It's no different, though, than a profiler for the police department. They look at their eyes. Do they make good eye contact? Do they dart with their eyes? Are they fidgety in their seat? What is their verbal communication style? Do they use complete sentences? Do they use fragments? Do they get uncomfortable with certain questions? So being able to read them nonverbally is important. And it's important to understand that in psychology, nonverbal communication is more reliable than verbal. Verbal, we can just lie all day long. But nonverbal will really tell you a lot about a prospect. And so to see these guys up front and close and ask them specific questions and observe their nonverbals is a very important piece of what I do.
I want to read something to you that came from Mike Lombardi of The Athletic yesterday. Mike Lombardi, a longtime NFL executive, worked here in Denver, has worked in New England, has worked with Al Davis in the Raiders organization, among others, worked also with Bill Walsh during his days at San Francisco. And he writes this week about various forms of bias. And since he used the word psychological, I thought I would bounce what he had to say off you. Self-serving bias is the first one teams most often have to overcome. Before the combine begins, every NFL team has a predetermined view of the players. They come to Indy after month-long meetings about each player with a strong opinion of their athletic and football skills. They love to brag about how they have their draft board all set. They won't allow any non-football drills to hurt anyone's draft ranking. They believe in their ability to evaluate. Their confidence is admirable, yet not always consistent. their self-serving bias and overt positivity about their ability to predict the future is the first step toward making mistakes. It's natural because bias is rooted in psychological tendencies that influence the subconscious. Does he know what he's talking about?
There's a good piece there. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, one thing I want people to understand is coaches are coaches. And, you know, they're trained to coach players in footwork, technique, in their specific position. They know scheme. But they're not trained evaluators. And that's an important thing to understand is you have to be able to have a critical thinking, a critical eye as to what you're seeing. And what he's talking about there is you do have a bias. You tend to see a kid as a football player only. But like one of the things I do is I cut football completely out of my evaluation. Even though I have a certain knowledge about football and I used to play, I don't evaluate anything that has to do with football. It's personality. And many of these coaches would really benefit, Sandy, you know, from coming at it from that angle, from a personality aspect. Who are they? Because what they bring on the football field from the neck up will tell you if this kid's going to fight, if he's going to fight through competition, if he's going to fight when he gets hit in the mouth. Because I'm going to tell you what, most of these 333 kids or however many were there have dominated, have been very good college players. But when they get to this next level, as you know, oh, they're going to get hit in the mouth. And that's when the mental side really comes into play, because there's going to be some people that say, whoa, I don't know about this. Everybody's as big as me, as fast as me, as strong as me. And then there's going to be the other guy that says, let's get it on. Let's do it. This is where I'm supposed to be. Let's do it. And that starts in the mind. You know, when people talk about a badass, you're a badass from the neck up first before from the neck down. We have a saying in football, looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane. There's a lot of guys out there that have it physiologically, but psychologically and mentally, they will not get after you, and that's what we evaluate.
How do you evaluate that? What are the questions? Like, because I see it too often where you got these guys that are freakish athletes.
Right.
And you're like, oh, my gosh, he's going to get to the NFL. He's going to wreck shop. And then all of a sudden they fizzle out and
right.
They don't even play a long time. A guy that comes to mind right now is a guy like Gabe Kirimi, was a left tackle for Wisconsin, drafted in the first round.
Right.
Washed right out of Chicago within 2 years, ended up in Tampa Bay, his third year of his rookie deal contract, and then washed out of Tampa Bay as well, but was a freakish athlete. So how do you get to the bottom of that? How are you able to recognize that?
Right. Well, let me first start with this, one of the things that we do is in these personality assessments, we measure two types of behavior, covert and overt. Covert, if you think of CO, it's covered. Thoughts, feelings, and perceptions. Overt, if you think of O, it's open. You can see that. Anger control, anger management, frustration, things like that. Covert behavior, you can't see. But we can measure, for example, in conscientiousness. In conscientiousness, we can tell if a player has a motor. I mean, an internal motor. Like, they'll play through no matter what. Or we can tell that they'll play if there's a carrot dangled in front of their face. The kid you're talking about, I know a little bit about, and I can tell you this, he's a carrot guy. He'll work if that carrot's in front of his face. But there's some kids that score high in what we call conscientiousness, means they'll go hard in the parking lot, out in the street, in a stadium. They don't care where it is, because when they line up, it's personal. And we can measure that, which is really cool. But here's the gap. There's about 20% of the coaches in the NFL that really understand what we do. The rest of them think we're kind of voodoo. We're kind of these psychological guys. Who are they? What are they doing? But if more coaches spent more time like the Sabins and the Belichicks of the world knowing what we do and understanding what we do, it's so powerful. Because, again, you may have from the neck down, you have him graded out at the top of your board, but from the neck up, he's a candy bar, man. That kid will not get after it. And we can measure his conscientiousness and tell you where his motor, if it burns within or it's motivated by external factors.
Vaughn Miller says this week it's time for Justin Simmons and Bradley Chubb to lead the Denver Broncos, or at least the defense. What does Dr. Rick Perea think about that? We'll find out next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Orlando and Sandy.
So Sandy Clough, Orlando Franklin, and of course in studio with us, Dr. Rick Perea, Think One, the behavior design specialist. Tell us more about Think One, Doctor.
We're off I-25 in Arapahoe, Sandy. We do a lot of things, not just the psychological, but the physiological that tie into the psychological. We train people through computer programs, their brains. We have float tanks. We have biomass that people lay on that break down lactic acid in the body. So the mind is connected to the central nervous system. So we treat the whole body. And we're working more and more with everyday people, Sandy. A lot of high school athletes are working with us now. So we're doing great things over at Think One.
Tell me quickly about the second bias that Michael Lombardi wrote about earlier this week at The Athletic. Confirmation bias. He writes, which occurs when teams want to confirm what they think. Therefore, they share their information with outside members to validate their belief. Indy is the perfect place for confirmation bias to soar. It will happen all over town, from inside the dome to St. Elmo's to Steak and Shake. Information gets out, not because people are disloyal, but because they want to confirm their bias. Before they head to Indy, teams tell their scouts or coaches to protect their information while finding out as much as they can. General managers want information coming in, not going out, because they think the more they know about what others believe, the better their draft preparations will be. They don't realize that information is fueling their biases, not helping their decision making.
Yeah, that's very informative. Let me tell you something. You heard of the NFL being a copycat league, right?
Yes, of course.
Now the reason it is because people don't always know what they're doing. I mean, here's the reality. That's why they copy people, because they're not analytical and confident enough that what they're running is what they should be running. Confirmation bias is rampant in the NFL because people don't understand their own processes. These teams change personnel departments, they change coaching staff so quickly that they don't have a chance to have a specific methodology, Sandy, that stays in place that they can use on a yearly basis to evaluate talent. So, you know, they know that so many teams will bust in the draft, and they're just so afraid of having a bust that they try to cross their T's and dot their I's. But what they don't understand, most of them, there are some teams that do understand this, but most of them do not understand from the neck up will be the most important part you can evaluate from these players, because all these players can play. Guaranteed, all these players can play. It's from the neck up that will set them apart.
Doc, I had my question all ready to go, but one of the texters wrote in, and I think it's more of an interesting question. I want you to speak to the quarterback situation, because I look at a quarterback like Joe Burrow coming out this year, and he seems like he has that cocky demeanor. He knows that, hey, I'm the guy. When he gets up there to the combine, he's interested in interviewing basically these teams and hearing about what it looks like he's the one interviewing versus
Correct.
The teams interviewing him. And then you look at a guy like Justin Herbert that is basically an introvert, is more quiet, personality. What are the differences between those as far as when they do get to the next level? Is one more poised to have more success than the other because of how they act psychologically?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in our assessment, we measure what's called gregariousness. And that gregariousness means their personality. Do they walk into the room, and can they feel comfortable around strange people immediately, or do they take a while to warm up? That projects to them as football players, too. The kids at the quarterback position that are gregarious tend to play better. If you go back to the year I came out of the year of the quarterback when Elway and Marino and all those guys came out, and you look at John, the success he had and the success Danny had down in Miami, they both have gregarious personalities. And that's one thing that we don't measure enough. Let me take that back. We measure it, but the teams don't use it enough in their evaluation process because, you know, I tell you, I have been around so many NFL quarterbacks that are quiet. They're quiet, and they think it's okay. When I got to Ryan Tannehill down in Miami, his receivers came to me almost from day one and says, this dude needs to be more of a leader. And I'm so proud of Ryan that he was a comeback player of the year this year, because he has really taken to our leadership training. You know, it's so important that quarterbacks have a gregarious personality so they connect with their receivers. You know, receivers will tell me, hey, I can't even talk to that guy in the huddle. You don't want that. You want some social cohesion. So in the personality department, it's really important at the quarterback position because they are verbal, they're vocal, and they're visual. And the more they allow themselves to be leaders and voice their opinion and help players believe in themselves and the team, they will be more successful.
There's another question here, and you know both these guys, and you know Juwan James from your time in Miami. And Colin and Windsor ask, you hear evaluators, coaches, say that there's some personality traits you can't teach. Is it true that one cannot develop tenacity or toughness? Can you turn a Juwan James into an Orlando Franklin or a Mark Schlereth? Maybe not that extreme, he writes, but move the needle just a little bit.
I also want to add to that same conversation, Bryce Callahan as well.
Yeah.
With the injuries that he sustained.
Right. Yeah. You know, that's a really good question, Sandy. And from my experience, I'm going to take quantitative experience and qualitative. Quantitative is assessments. Qualitative is the human experience. You know, I really believe that the personality is built in the formative years growing up. You know, in adolescence from 10 and a half to 24 and a half is when the brain is still developing. And the prefrontal cortex, you know, executive functioning skills like planning, organizing skills is not fully developed till 24 years. So a lot of these players, quote unquote, are still in the oven cooking. But my point, what he's getting to with Juwan is I've told you here before, I love Juwan physically. He's the prototype. He's got long arms. He's tall. He's rangy. He's athletic. But, you know, Juwan grew up in a very analytical home. His mom has a PhD, and so he's very analytical, which means he thinks things through. Sometimes the best players in the NFL have this mentality of, you know, just being able to go after people. When they get hit in the mouth, they'll come back. Teaching that tenacity, Sandy, I believe is a personality trait that's developed through the first 23 years. And, you know, either you have it or you don't. And it's hard to really make, you know, a golden retriever into a pit bull. It's really hard to do that, and from what I've seen. Now, can a player get along at certain positions just being athletic and a great athlete? Absolutely. But at certain positions, you know, you got to have some tenacity on the defensive line, the one technique, the three technique. You've got to relish contact. You've got to relish being able to fight up there with the big dogs on the offensive line, just like offensive linemen. You know, you've been around some players that are finesse players, and you've been around some players that'll get in your stuff. So I don't believe, Sandy, in my experience, you can move the needle a little bit, but I'm telling you what, if you got a golden retriever, you got a golden retriever.
When we come back again, Vaughn Miller talking about Justin Simmons and Bradley Chubb as future leaders of the Denver Broncos. And we'll get Rick Perea's reaction as well to what took place with the Nuggets and Clippers on Friday night. The Nuggets get drubbed. The coach comes out after the game, says the team is soft. And the players speak as well, but only two are designated to come out of the locker room, and neither one is named Nikola Jokic. We'll talk about all that next.
This segment on 104.3 The Fan is brought to you by SCL Mortgage.
Download the Fan app, presented by Advanced Tax Solutions. To listen live and check out everything happening at 104.3thefan.com.
It's Orlando and Sandy on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Dr. Rick Perry in studio with us, and I want to get to this Vaughn Miller statement. And this is Jeff Legwald writing for ESPN.com. As long as Miller is in the Broncos' defensive room, he will be the guy. But he knows what the locker room looked like, and so do you, Rick Perea, when the Broncos were at their best. And he writes, that's why players such as Justin Simmons and Bradley Chubb are so important. Here's what Miller had to say about it. It's about the leadership of everybody, every day. The best leaders I've been around, Peyton Manning, DeMarcus Ware, were out there, but they pushed other people to lead, too. We have those kinds of guys, and they're ready. Vaughn Miller does not seem to be a natural leader, and I'm wondering if at this point in his career, whether he wants to be or not, he has to be. Rather than deferring to Bradley Chubb and Justin Simmons, who, by the way, is an unrestricted free agent,
right,
will probably almost certainly be franchise tagged by the Broncos, who'll be around this year, and Chubb is coming off an injury. But you know Vaughn Miller very well.
Yes.
What do you think of that statement?
You know, I like the statement, but I don't like the statement. You know, Vaughn needs to step up and be a leader, and he is. He is in many ways. You know, he was mentored by DeMarcus, and DeMarcus had a great relationship with him when we were here. Those two had a brotherhood that was unmistakable during our Super Bowl season. And I can tell you this, Vaughn understands that leadership is important. You know, that's one of those things when you work with a player, you say, look, we're going to work on leadership that has nothing to do with football. But it has everything to do with football. And that's what Vaughn is beginning to understand. He's in his, I don't know, eighth or ninth year right now. It's time he step up as a leader and understand verbal and vocal leadership that's really important for him, but not only for him, to pick up other people. You know, that's one of the things we talk. There's five different leadership styles that's primarily used in the NFL, and there's different styles that everybody fits into. For example, there's what we call reverent leadership. Reverent leadership means you do it by example. You do your job the right way every day, and people observe you doing that, and they want to perform well because they see you doing that. But Vaughn is such a prominent figure, not only here, but in the National Football League, period. And his leadership skills can make a huge difference on this defense. DeMarcus Ware, to me, is the uncrowned MVP of that Super Bowl season because he led behind the scenes. He got Vaughn in a great spot for success, and we saw what Vaughn did in that game. We saw what DeMarcus did in that game. It turned the whole game around in the Super Bowl. So I think Vaughn is on to something, but he needs to step up and be more of a verbal, vocal, and visual leader for this Denver defense to take the next step.
Doc, I want to ask you about Bryce Callahan because this guy's on this roster and Vic Fangio obviously wanted him here. And right now you got a guy like Chris Harris Jr. that's probably going to walk out the door because Bryce Callahan is on this roster.
Right.
And just their positions don't fit. Bryce wanted to come in here to play that cornerback in that slot position. And Chris, you know, in Vic Fangio's defense now playing that number one cornerback role. So my question to you is, with the injuries that Bryce Callahan has had, is it something that we should be worried about him getting back from? Because, you know, in my experience playing in this league, when you hurt something and then you're rehabbing it and you hurt it again, it's just like, are you kidding me, man? What, not again. And it's hard psychologically to work through that, and you always feel like you're favoring it in practice. So should we anticipate that with a guy like Bryce Callahan, or should we anticipate him coming back and having a strong year?
Well, see, one of the things I would want to know, is his personality assessment, because, again, everybody doesn't come back the same way from injuries, and especially when you have a re-injury, then it really becomes mental. How do you talk to yourself? What are the words you use with yourself? And so many people will favor that injury, and then that'll cause different angles on other parts of the body in terms of the knee and ankle and things like that. So people have to understand recovery from injury is mostly mental. It is mostly mental and psychological in terms of what our belief system, we call it self-efficacy. Self-efficacy is a belief system in ourself. And the astute trainers in the NFL now are understanding how to use visualization, just like players do for performance on the field, using visualization to help them see their knee being more flexible, their ankle being more flexible, see themselves out on the field making those cuts, being able to plant on that ankle or that knee, because the brain records this activity as you're visualizing it, and it's releasing oxytocin in the brain as well. So it's helping not only the physiological part heal, but the psychological. So when you actually get out on the field, you can plant because the brain's saying, I've been here before. It's making that recording. So the trainers in the NFL are now starting to understand the psychological and emotional connection to physiological recovery.
We have a question on the RamosLaw.com text line from the 303. Please ask Dr. Puri about the Nuggets getting drubbed by the Clippers on Friday night. Barton speaking up in the locker room, but Jokic remaining silent. Malone calling the team soft. Monte Morris reinforcing what Malone had to say outside the locker room. He was one of the players who was called out. Jokic, when approached in the locker room, basically shrugged off the loss and said they were just a little bit better than we were tonight.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason why they decide not to put Jokic in front of the media. There's a reason why, because he's kind of a joyful, silly, kind of goofy guy. But, you know, one of the things when you talk about Malone calling the team soft, what I would prefer Mike to do is say we were soft tonight. we were soft tonight. Not calling the team soft, because I think the players can internalize that as he may be turning on us. I know Mike loves to hard-nose players.
Yep.
He loves defensive players. But I think they do play soft from time to time, which is going to happen in the span of an NBA season.
In the context of what he was saying, he said they came to play with something at stake. We treated it as just another game.
Well, you know, one of the things, Sandy, I think it's not hard to look. There are some players on that team. I got to call it what it is. There are some players on that team that are soft, okay? So if you have some soft players on your team, you're going to play soft at times. You need leadership on that team. Now, if you need to look me in the eye, anyone, not I'm just talking about you two sitting right here, tell me who the leadership on that team is, the verbal, the vocal, the visual leadership on that team. Who is it?
Maybe Bart.
Yeah,
maybe Barton. He was the guy who spoke up in the locker room very angrily after the game.
And you know what? I love B. I love B. He's a great kid. Been around him. I love his belief system. You know, but if you look at things, you know, Sandy, they traded away a kid named like Malik Beasley, who, you know,
you thought they traded away the wrong guard.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you know what Malik brings every night is a mentality, is a belief system that is so strong. And I love that about him. When you got players on that team that if they get hit in the mouth, they'll back down. So Malik to me is a guy, I don't even know what he's doing. I haven't kept track of him, but I know he scored 27-24.
Yeah, Minnesota.
That can be skewed because he's playing on not as good a team. I get that. But I'll tell you what, Malik Beasley is a kid from the neck up that has it going on.
Doc, real quick, I just want to ask you, has there ever been a person, obviously you can't break client privilege, but has there ever been a person that you're just like, after evaluating them, man, I can't help this guy? And basically, what were their traits where you came to that conclusion where you just couldn't help them?
Yeah, the major trait, to answer your question first, I have been around a couple. And one recently that came to my facility, and I tell you what, we tried an intensive with him. Narcissism is one, and the sociopathic behaviors, meaning that they feel like they don't have to adhere to today's laws and rules. This player came into my facility, and started trying to pick up the girls who worked in my office. And I told him, I says, look, man, this is not, you're here to do work. You're here to get better. And it just didn't register with him. So narcissism is a big one, but also the sociological pathology of an NFL player thinking he's above the law. Those things I can't correct. I can't. If you believe you're above the law and you don't have to adhere to teams, and that's what happened with this player. Oh, three teams and he's out of the league and the kid can flat play. But he emotionally and psychologically willed himself out of the NFL.
Dr. Perea, it's been a pleasure as always. Think One, the behavior design specialist, and the email address, first of all, it's www.thinkoneforyou.org, and the email is drp@thinkoneforyou.org. And as always, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
See you back.
Love being with you guys.
Yeah, thanks, Doc. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. Love
you. Appreciate it. And we will continue. We were talking a lot about Brandon Scherff yesterday, but since there have been any number of reports revealing that Washington plans to use the franchise tag on the right guard, should the Broncos now join some other teams, perhaps, in pursuit of the New England free agent right guard, Joe Tooney? We'll talk about that next.